the Psalms of Degrees or Song of Ascents from the 120th Psalm through the 134th Psalm. Of course, we're not going to cover all those 15 short Psalms, just a few thoughts probably from the first one or two of them. These are, as we understand, a liturgy, a group of psalms that they would sing as they made progression up to the temple, the congregation of the Lord. But they're very appropriately entitled in the purpose for which they are preserved for us in a spiritual sense, in that they're called, in some translations, Song of Degrees or Song of Ascents. They're both. It is an ascending. Each of them moves up a little higher than the prior one. And they are by degrees. It chronicles to a great extent the pilgrim's journey of faith to the Lord and in his spiritual growth in grace in the Lord, each one building upon the other. Beginning with the 120th Psalm, we will read it and then maybe a verse or two from Psalm 121. In my distress, I cried to the Lord, and he heard me. Deliver my soul, O Lord. This is my cry. Deliver my soul, O Lord, from lying lips and from deceitful tongue. What shall be given to you? Or what shall be done to you, you false tongue? Sharp arrows of the warrior, with coals of the broom tree. Woe is me, for I sojourn in Meshech, that I dwell among the tents of Kedar. My soul has dwelt too long with one who hates peace. I am for peace, but when I speak, they're for war. This is especially instructive in that he's about to move from where he was. He says, I've been here too long. I've had enough of this. I'm not going to stay here any longer. Tells a little bit about what has precipitated this resolve to get out of these tents, to get away from where I'm living. He's in great distress. And his distress is lying lips and deceitful tongue. And the question is, what am I going to do about it? What is the remedy? What can be done about these lying lips and this deceitful tongue? How can we fix that? What can be done for it? What's the answer? Well, the question might come to it, who's he talking about, or what is he talking about? And he talks about lying lips and deceitful tongues. Is somebody bad-mouthing him? Somebody telling stories on him, and gossiping about him and slandering him? Well, possibly true. Slander and false accusation, condemnation is a sorrow and a grief that's very difficult to deal with. You can't stop it. You try to defend yourself, you look as if you're guilty. If you don't defend yourself, you look like you are guilty. If you stop one lie, you don't remember when another one's going to start. Is he talking about people slandering him, or is he talking about his own lying tongue? You ever have a problem with a lying tongue? Have you always been very, very honest and truthful in everything you said? Or have sometimes you said something and then with shock you realize you lied? You didn't intend to, it just come out. And you say, well, it really wasn't a lie, it just wasn't the representation. Why didn't you tell the truth? The truth of the matter is this world in which we live is a world of darkness and lies and deception. The Bible tells us the devil himself is the father of lies. He was a murderer from the beginning. And he's always a liar. Lies are synonymous with darkness and delusion and uncertainty. And so this world and its whole existence is a fraud in which people live. They live in a delusion. They live with lies. We ordinarily do not expect people to be truthful to us. That's why folks use the expression, well, when they ask you, you answer a question, well, to be honest. Well, does that mean that ordinarily you would be dishonest? Or to tell the truth? Even the Apostle Paul, God being my witness, I lie not. That is why that when you sign a contract and you make a deal, they make you swear and you get somebody to come in and say, you're not lying, I know this fellow, this is the truth. That's why when you give testimony in court, they cause you to swear, now right now, I'm usually a liar, and you can expect lies, but I'm going to tell the truth here. No, the general tone of this world is a lie, and it's darkness. It's a fraud. It's emptiness. There's nothing that you can depend on anywhere. Everything is flaccid, unsound, shaky. There's no solid place to put your feet. He's had enough of it. I'm tired of it. What is the cure for the lying lips and the deceitful tongue? How do you cure that? We talked about this a little bit last night with someone about this present thing. How is the President Bush or the government going to fight this war? What are you going to fight? What nation is it you're going to war with? And what goods are going to go over there and bomb the nation and destroy a bunch of stuff that we're going to have to rake up money to pay for and rebuild again ourselves? Well, if we could just kill these madmen, you know, these fellows that's causing all the problems, we could just assassinate them and kill them, that'd stop it, wouldn't it? No, it wouldn't, because there's another just waiting for that fellow to move on so he can take over. You kill one head liar, and the next one comes up. What's your cure for it? You're going to stop the world from lying? The only cure is something done in the heart and soul of man. Now, this is some sort of an obscure remedy that said here, what shall be given to you or what shall be done to you, you false tongue? How am I going to cure that? How are you going to stop your lie? How are you going to be true? How are you going to change from what you've been brought up with in the beginning, all the way through? He uses probably, which was a very familiar and well-understood figure of speech at that time, which but seems rather mysterious to us. My translation says, sharp arrows of the warrior or of the mighty one with coals of the broom tree. I'm sure that was a familiar phrase at that time, and the people who read it knew exactly what it means. And you and I can pretty well tell what it means, too. The sharp arrows of the warrior or the mighty one has a relationship to death. It's something like what you have in Genesis 3 and 24. When the man was driven out of the garden, the Lord placed in paradise there, at the garden, at the gate of the garden, he placed an angel, and the angel had something in his hand. What was it? You want to tell me? He placed at the gate an angel with a flaming sword, which turned every way to keep the way of the tree of life, the paradise. If you get back into paradise, you're out in here in the tents of Kedar and Meshach now. You want to get back into paradise. You've got to come by the way of the flaming sword. The fire of purging, fires of purification, and the sword of death. The way of the cross leads home. I'm tired living where I am. I want to get out of here. What's going to cure? What's going to deliver? What's going to be the hope? Nothing but the cross. the way of the cross leads home. I must needs go home by the way of the cross. There's no other way but this. I shall ne'er get sight of the gates of life if the way of the cross I miss. And so here's an illusion here. The only cure. The only cure for the false tongue, the lie, the delusion, the emptiness, the fraud in which we live is the cross. Woe is me. This is the beginning of the journey. And the Lord, unto the Lord I cried in my distress. He had enough of it. No one is going to come to Christ until they get enough of the tents of Kedar and of Meshach. He says, I've had enough. I've dwelt too long here. Meshach is one of the, Kedar is one of the sons of Japheth. The three sons of Noah, Ham, Shem, and Japheth. He says, God shall enlarge Japheth, and he shall dwell in the tents of Shem. Japheth is pretty well the dominating power in this world. From it descended the Japhetic, mostly Caucasian tribes, who has always held the reins of power, authority in this world. Descended from Japheth. Kedar, or rather Meshach, is one of the descendants of Ishmael. And you know what the Bible says about Ishmael? He should be a wild man, a wild donkey. His hand against every man and every man's hand against him. And so there was a war. Here are the powers that be on this earth that run things, that pull the strings of power, that control the money and the empire, the kings of the earth, represented in one. And the warring, hostility, the hate, and the fighting represented in the other. He said, I had enough of it. There is no peace. I'm for peace. When you get tired of fighting, get tired of striving, and you try to make peace. You've been fighting too, all along. You said, I had enough of that. I'm not going to fight anymore. I've had enough of that. I'm ready to lay down my arms. I'm for peace. And so I go to Meshach. I go to Kedar. I said, look, let's have peace. Let's get the peace process started. Amen. Let's have an armistice. Let's end all of this. Everyone listen to me. Camp David won't work. Diplomacy won't work. Tomahawk missiles won't work. Nothing will work. But he says, my soul has dwelt too long here. I'm living in the wrong place. I'm not going to live here any longer. I'm getting out of here. How are you going to get out? Well, he doesn't give us the answer in this psalm. He doesn't have the answer yet. We'll find it as it goes on. But if we go into the next one, the first one is said, I've had enough of this. I'm ready to move on. I can't change anything. I can't fix the lying tongue. I can't change the deception and the darkness of this world. I can't bring about peace in this world. I'm getting out of here. So he says, I will lift up my eyes. How instructive that is. How wonderful it is. When we're going around in this dark gloom and depression and despair, when we're frightened, when we're horrified, when we're distressed, when we don't know where to turn, when everything looks dark and everything looks hopeless, you know what the problem is? Your gaze is too low. You lift up your eyes. You look a little higher than where you've been focusing. This is a verse that troubled me for years in the old King James, and I read it I will lift up my eyes to the hills from whence cometh my help. I couldn't figure that out. How in the world those hills are going to help anything? I will lift up my eyes to the hills from whence come. I heard people quote that. Well, where are you going to have? What good is it going to do to look at the hills? It isn't like we're out in the desert there and crossing the rough country and the Indians are surrounded us and about to take us, and all of a sudden you hear the bugles tooting and you look across the hills there and here comes the cavalry. They're going to rescue us. Our rescue going to come out of those hills? Are those big hills going to walk down and deliver us? And so I wondered about that for years. And I found out the problem was in the punctuation of the translation. He doesn't say, I will lift up my eyes to the hills from whence my help comes, but he says, I will lift up my eyes to the hills, period. And then he asks the question, from whence cometh my help? From those hills? No. My help comes from the Lord who made those hills. Look unto the Lord. Look unto me, all ye ends of the earth, and be ye saved, for I am God and there is none other. I'm the Lord. There's no other. Where is he? Did you all invite him this morning? You're welcome. You see him coming. Anyone seen God today? No, he is the invisible God. And we could talk a while about that. That's one of his marvelous attributes, that he is invisible. How do you know he is? Look at the hills. You look at those hills. They're fixed. They've been there for millenniums. How come they're there? God made them. They're fixed. They're not going to change. They're not going to move. The eternal God who fixed them is the eternal God who will save you. It will be the beginning of our encouragement. If we cannot see God, look at the works of God. Look at what he's done in your life. Look at where you are right now. Think about where you were once. And you look at the works of God. It is the beginning of our escape from the tents of Kedar and Meshach, from the darkness and delusions and vanities and frustrations and emptiness of this world. It is the beginning of our sojourn to see and think and meditate on the wonders of God's works, what he has done. God has set his works before us, continually before us, evident for all of us. There's no place where that testimony is not heard. It's all around you. It's in your body. It's everywhere. In order to point us to his word, that we might come to know his ways and his will and know him. So it will be good for us this morning as we go to pray, to lift our eyes up to the hills. And I'm not necessarily talking about going out and taking a nature trip. The hills represent everything he has done. Think about yourself. What God has done in your life. What he has wrought. What he is now working. And then you will find some hope to deliver you out of present distress. We could go a little further, but you said 15 minutes, that's enough. We came here to pray, not to preach. And so, Brother, we'll pray.